Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And before we get started today, I do want to take a moment to thank you if you were part of our fall membership drive. We wrapped things up yesterday afternoon, and we just made our goal. In fact, we hadn't quite made it when we stopped talking about it on the air, but thanks to generous individuals, we have met our goal for that fall membership drive. And of course, that keeps Iowa Public Radio strong and growing into the future. Whether you gave during the drive or whether you are a member of Iowa Public Radio, thank you for doing what you do. You make all that you hear on the air possible. Now, let's talk about plants. It is Horticulture Day, and we know that there are all kinds of environmental benefits to landscape with native plants. But for a lot of people, that represents a real cultural shift. This hour, we're going to talk about how to find the right native plants, or nativars, native cultivars, for your landscape. Cindy Haynes is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Mark Vitosh is here, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
And Cindy, let's start with you. Mm-hmm. When somebody thinks, okay, I want to integrate native plants into my landscape, that doesn't necessarily mean I want to kill the lawn and plant a prairie. Mm-hmm. So where do you start? There's a happy medium there, right?
There is a happy medium. And there's a lot of really wonderful prairie plants, cultivars of prairie plants that are a little bit smaller, a little more tidy, a little bit easier to grow that you can have in that kind of full sun landscape in the front and kind of make it fit with the other trees and shrubs. So you're kind of getting that mix of the prairie as well as the kind of manicured or managed landscape.
And you do need to be careful. I know that on Hort Day, many times we've had calls from people who say, well, I planted cup plants because I wanted cup plant in this little area, and now they've taken over my whole yard and they're giant.
Right.
So you have to pick the right ones.
Right, because that's what they do in the prairie, and that's what we want them to do in a prairie. But in our home landscape, we need something just our footprint's a little bit smaller, so sometimes we need something a little bit smaller as well.
When a lot of us landscape and think about planting perennials, we also have this homogenous idea of I will plant this perennial in this space, so this will be my area for this kind of plant, which is not how prairies operate.
No.
So again, help me think through the process. When I want to put native plants in my landscape, can I make native plants fit that rubric that's in my head?
Sure. You can think about that there are some native plants that kind of grow in communities. So in a prairie, we think about things that are kind of spring blooming as well as summer and into fall. So you can pick some of those species and kind of plant them together in the same kind of community. And then you pick cultivars of those that are maybe a little, like I said, a little bit smaller or a little less floppy or that are available at a garden center, because sometimes that's the only thing that's available at a garden center is the cultivar of coneflower that might be a little bit different than that coneflower that's in the prairie.
All right. So give me some examples of some of the plants that you like to work with.
Yeah. So coneflowers are one of them. There's a lot of coneflowers that are native to Iowa in the Midwest. And there are a lot of wonderful cultivars of those right now that might be hybrids, that might be selections of prairie plants that are a little bit smaller, a little more compact. Like I have one called Hot Papaya. That's just a really cool one. There's a bunch. Magnus is one that's been around for a really long time that's purple. There's even coneflowers that are red and gold, because I have to talk about something cardinal and gold, called tomato soup and mac and cheese. So there are cultivars out there of coneflower that you could make work that look a little bit like that kind of prairie plant and have that long bloom time that we love with coneflower.
Well, and I mentioned the environmental benefits of planting native plants. Would those nativars, would those cultivars of these plants, would they have the same kind of benefits?
They would. They would have the same kind of benefits. Some of the cultivated varieties of native plants actually bloom a little bit longer because they're a little more compact. But you have to really kind of read the label on that one. So, because everyone's just a little bit different.
How about native grasses in this landscape?
Yeah, and it's perfect. So think about Little Blue Stem, which is a perfect grass for a home landscape. It's not too big. And then we think about the cultivars like Blue Heaven or maybe even the Blues that stand up a little bit better. They're not quite as floppy as that typical Little Blue Stem that it would happen in the prairie. And that's perfect in the prairie, but, you know, next to your sidewalk, you want something that kind of stands up a little bit better. And then there's some cultivars that actually have, like, Blue Heaven that have a good fall color, too.
Well, that is an interesting thing. When you walk through the prairies in the fall, there are really interesting colors that come out. So you're getting a little texture, a little color that lasts throughout the season, then.
Right, right.
When you're planting these perennials, what do you have to do to get them established?
It's just like any other perennial or tree or shrub that you would plant. These are usually sold in containers at a garden center. So when you're planting them, make sure you read the label so you have the mature size. You've placed it, you know, and given it enough room, and then you plant it level with the surface of the soil or maybe a little bit above so in case you're going to mulch that particular area.
A few years ago, if you wanted to get these plants, you had to order them pretty much.
Right.
So is that changing at your local lawn and garden center?
Sure. You're seeing a lot of cultivars that are available at your garden center for these different ornamental grasses, these different coneflowers. You're seeing butterfly milkweed because of the popularity of pollinator plants. You're seeing a lot of these things in garden centers and even discount stores. So they're available this time of year and perfect for planting.
When you buy those plants, do you have to be concerned about insecticides? I mean, I know that the neonicotinoid insecticides have often been applied to nursery plants. People are worried about bringing that into a pollinator-friendly environment. Do we have to worry about that with these native plants?
Yeah. It's if they're still a production facility in a greenhouse, they might still be using some of those. But this late in the season, I think it's less of a concern.
All right. Well, let's shift to talking about woody shrubs and plants, some natives for our environment, our landscapes. I mean, Mark, we talk a lot about trees. So let's go a little smaller.
More like shrubs and stuff, you mean? There's a lot of good native shrubs, depending on your situation, depending, you know, and Cindy will talk about this, and we always go back to this. You need to make sure, no matter what you're planting, that you evaluate that site. What are the growing conditions? What's the available light? What's the potential moisture? Because not all these plants, even the grasses and those, maybe like a, there's certain that don't like wet areas, there's some that like drier sites, stuff like that. But there's a lot of native shrubs, a number of the viburnums, arrowwood viburnum, nannyberry viburnum. I always talk about nannyberry, but it's kind of interesting. I was in a woodland the other day, and I don't see nannyberry viburnum out in the wild that much. It is native, but I saw some beautiful, very large, probably 8 to 12-foot nannyberry, just big clumps with these beautiful purple berries this time of year. So I like those two. Another one I like, it's kind of a scrubby one, kind of a bearded plant, but that would be the American plum. It's a great wildlife habitat. That plum's there, creates the thicket. And then there's a number of dogwoods, gray dogwood, red osier dogwood, silky dogwood. And then even some of the lower, I think, of ninebark. And there's cultivars of that. I tend to try to stay more towards the true native selection. I know you guys like the cultivars and stuff. And I would also put a vote in when we're looking at prairies and stuff like that, even little backyard. I have a pocket prairie, and I don't have any cultivars. I have just straight whatever's in the wild. And it's pretty unique in itself, too.
Yeah, so maybe describe your yard for us, because that there are a lot of people who would love to do that in their yards in town, but are a little bit afraid, a little bit worried about what the neighbors will say, a little worried about keeping it in its place.
Exactly. So I selected my backyard because my neighbors like me, and I also have basically a backyard that has green space, and then the previous landowner, thank gosh, planted a white pine, a Norway spruce, and a concolor fir. That's my back. And behind that is a
park.
And
you bought your house based on those trees,
didn't you? I actually did.
Yeah, okay.
my wife said she liked the house, and I said, well, let me look at the trees, and then we'll decide if I'm going to put a bid on this house or not. We actually, there was a house before, had a tree that I did not like. I said, I will not live here. And she accepted it. She puts up with me. But anyway, I have grass. And then those trees, then I have a park behind me, and you don't know the park's there because of those nice conifers. But all my water runs off my house, and I actually have a creek in the back. And I've had a lot of issues with erosion and stuff because of all the water coming down the creek. So to help the butterflies and pollinators and stuff, but also to reduce the water from my house, I actually planted a strip prairie between mm-hmm. my house and the conifers. And it's only about 10 to 12 feet wide, but it's kind of like a U in my backyard between that. And I have a very small strip of green grass in between that. But then I've put some other plants, pollinator plants, kind of scattered through there. But I have that strip prairie that I planted 19 years ago. And what I did, I didn't want to use herbicide. So I went and actually scraped all the grass off in a 10 to 12 foot wide strip. And basically raked that. Then I collected local seed from some of the local schools mm-hmm. from their prairies. And then I also bought some local ecotype. I raked it, put it down in the fall, got the spare tire on my car, and rolled that to pack that in. Because you want that seed just to make contact with the soil. And I could burn. In most prairies, you like to burn, but being in the city, there's a lot of rules, and you can do it, but I mow mine every 2 to 3 years, and I do a lot of cutting of woody plants. I get a lot of ash and mm-hmm. walnut and stuff coming mm-hmm. in, but that thing has been different every year. And you mentioned cup plant. I did not plant cup plant. I did not plant it, but it showed up anyway, and it is taking over parts of my little prairie, but it has shifted every year, and I get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, more of that this year, more of that. But this year with the pollinators and stuff, it's cool. And then in the winter, I like it in the backyard because it's kind of messy. But you know what I see back there? I see cardinals and blue jays and other birds that kind of stick around the winter. They love that cover and stuff with the evergreens right next to it. So there's a lot of benefits to that.
So you're an advocate for embracing the wildness.
I am, but that's not something I would have planned in my front yard.
Right.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. We've been talking about using native plants in your garden, yard, or landscape. But, of course, they're here to answer your questions about any of the plants in your life, or trees, of course. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's start with Judith on the line in Coralville. Hi, Judith.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for taking my
sure.
call. I'd like to first say, Mark, I have a yard much like yours with a combination of prairie and planted and cultivated, and I have a tiny backyard, so it's in the front, and I have very loving neighbors who every year say, oh, I love your garden.
Oh, so, nice.
Awesome. Well, my neighbors are loving, too. I just was trying to get along with them from the beginning.
It's beautiful. You know, it starts with bulbs in the spring and goes on. So now it's a bird seed, so I'm happy. But I have a question about long-standing lilacs. My neighbor and I share a line of them. And for years, they were prolific, beautiful blooming. In the past 3-4 years, it's just dwindled. We've done the cutting out the dead work. He's cut them back. We've let them grow. Do they have a life cycle? Am I done with it? Are they done? This year we got like 4 lilacs.
All of these lilacs, they're actually dying out?
They're fine. They're beautiful green bushes, okay. But
they're not flowering.
They're just not flowering.
I put bone meal down in the fall mm-hmm. and in the spring, and I don't know what I'm calling the experts.
Well, lilacs need full sun to bloom well, so that's the first
thing.
They've
got it. Okay. They've got it.
And then they also start to produce flower buds in the fall. So if you're doing a lot of pruning over the winter, sometimes you're removing those, you know, initial flowers.
Well, I understand that, and we've stopped. We've not done that. We've done that. Do they? I don't know. Do they have a lifetime? Should we take them out?
We have lilacs that live to be 100 years, so they can last for a long time. They have to be rejuvenated every few years or every couple of decades per se, and rejuvenation usually means taking out the oldest stems in the winter, a third 1 year, a third the next year, a third the next. That helps control height and sometimes kind of promotes them to be vigorous.
You said during the winter she should wait till it's dormant?
Yeah, she should wait till it's dormant to do that. But that way you can just see the stems better. And if you're only taking out a third of the stems, then you've got two-thirds left to still bloom. So you're not removing a lot of blooms. That's kind of the easiest way to do it.
All right, so it will be a process.
It will be
a three-year renewal process, and you would probably have reduced blooms during that time, although it sounds like she's not having any blooms, so this could be a massive improvement.
That could be. The other thing I would avoid with lilacs are a lot of fertilizers. Sometimes lilacs do really well in our soils and in our conditions with not a lot of care. Making sure that you're not using a lot of high nitrogen fertilizers near the lawn in that area might be important. So avoid some of that. So full sun, maybe renew them or rejuvenate them with this 3 years of pruning and avoid a lot of fertilizer and just see how it goes.
I think the good thing is they look healthy. And
yes.
We've had a lot of calls this year, and I've listened to the radio, and there's been a lot of declining lilac and stuff. So I think the fact that they look healthy, they have good color and stuff, like Cindy said, you keep working with them and eventually they should start to come back. And I've actually done that with mine in my backyard. And the one thing I did notice is there is kind of a gap there. You do lose some flowers. And then at some point it does kind of get overwhelmed again, and then you have to renovate again. So you have to kind of keep – and if you look – a lot of times you'll see those older stems and you'll see those young ones coming. And if you see a lot of those young ones coming, then it's a good time to maybe consider some renovation.
All right, Judith, good luck. I hope they come back within the next few years. Next, let's go to Tom in Arcadia. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there?
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes, I am, finally. I got to pull off.
Okay.
I'm on the boat.
Be safe.
Okay.
All right.
I have a patch of coneflowers that are really thick and dense, and I want to split them up if I could.
You can, and actually now's a pretty decent time to do that. You can also do that in early spring. You can just kind of go in and take plants and kind of divide them. You can also start some of these from seed, particularly if it's a species. Like Mark did in his prairie, and just kind of harvest those seeds and sow them. So it's easy to divide, and it's easy to start seed with coneflowers. Either or will probably work really well for you. And if you have a large patch, kind of taking out some of the center areas will probably help rejuvenate what's left.
And you can frost seed
too.
How
much dirt do I take with it if I can?
Well, when you're dividing, I want you to take, as much of the root system as you can when you're actually doing the division. So you want the plant to have a nice crown, a nice root system. That will require a little bit of dirt, but you can shake some of that off as long as you're not damaging the roots too much, and then replant that in another area.
In the spring.
You can do this in the early spring, or you can actually probably do that now, and it'll have about a month of good root development before winter hits.
All right. Sounds like a great early fall job. Tom, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Linda in Iowa City. Hi, Linda.
Hi, I'm here. Thank you for taking this call.
Sure.
I have a shady backyard in a lawn in my house in Iowa City. It's shady. It's near a ravine, so it can be a little damp. And this summer, we have been invaded by something that seems to be nimbleweed or nimblewill. Mm-hmm. It's an invasive grass. It's taken over this entire lawn. When we pull it out, there's nothing left. The regular, the normal grass is not there at all. It's bare. And I am petrified that it's moving across the lawn. In the front lawn, we have a remarkable zoysia front lawn.
Oh, nice.
Which is very resistant to weeds. Mm-hmm. And I really don't, I'm desperate to keep the nimbleweed out of the zoysia and to get some advice about how to handle the stuff in the back, which has already taken over.
Right. And the lawn in the back is, because it's shady, the grass can't outcompete a lot of the weeds that are normal. That
right.
In your zoysia lawn, which is in the front, probably has a lot more sun and it's more effective at doing that.
Exactly.
Right. So moving to a grass species that will tolerate more shade might be a possibility in the back, like a fine fescue or a fescue mix. You're also going to have to try and remove as much of this nimbleweed as possible. And this is not an easy one. This is a hard one. It may require some herbicides. It may require some pulling. It's definitely going to require some persistence. And you need to find something that will target that particular weed, which, you know, one treatment isn't probably going to be enough. So go ahead.
It almost sounds like in the shady back, from time to time, we get some volunteer ajuga.
Okay.
I would not mind having a lot of ajuga in the back.
So maybe
if it would be happy.
Yeah. So maybe you shift from lawn in the back, and if the grass is having a hard time, kill that whole area. Try to kill the nimbleweed, and then come back in with a ground cover like ajuga or one of the other shade-tolerant ground covers. And it might be just perfectly fine for that particular area. And ajuga and barren strawberry and vinca, they do a great job of, you know, maintaining that soil and growing well in denser shade than what grass can do.
All right. Linda, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can join our conversation. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Greg is on the line next in Urbandale. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
What's your question?
Hello.
Yeah.
My question is, we have white bugs invading our blue muffin hedge. It's invading our hydrangea plants, and it did also kill many of our geraniums.
Are they flying white bugs, like little white
yes,
flies?
Yes, they are, and they're very, very tiny. They're about the size of a pinhead.
Yeah, so they sound like white flies. And when you said hydrangeas and geraniums, sometimes we'll see white flies, especially late in the summer, when it's been really warm. And we might see this on hibiscus as well. This is a hard one to control, and because it requires a spray, sometimes a soapy water will kind of keep them in check. I wouldn't worry too much because the winter's going to take care of them.
Should he maybe take a sample to the extension office to make sure, verify? Because there's always other possibilities.
This is true. Yeah. We are not the entomologists, so you want to consult an entomologist, that's for sure.
Okay.
But I would take a sample to your county extension office, and they should be able to either identify it there with one of their master gardeners or someone on staff, or they'd be able to send it up to the entomology folks up in Ames to get it identified, to make sure that's exactly what you have.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Greg. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, we've got John in Harvey. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Mark was talking about native plums, and I was wondering how to propagate those from seed.
Everything needs usually some kind of cold stratification. And I'm not sure the exact time frame for the plums.
Probably about 3 months.
Okay. But there actually is a great publication that you can find online. It's USDA Woody Plant Manual. And in there, they actually have the treatments for different seeds. And plum would be Prunus americana. And if you look on there, it will tell you how to stratify those. Usually, though, if it tells you that you can plant them in the fall, I would actually go and do the stratification outdoors in the fall rather than, especially when you get the bigger seeds, it's a lot easier to plant those in the fall in the location that you want them. Even if it's planting them in pots in the ground and covering them up, you're better to do that cold stratification outside. We talk about acorns and all that kind of stuff. The bigger seeds, it's a lot better to do the cold stratification outside if you can. But that manual will give you the exact schedule on what, you know, if it's 2 months, 3 months. But in most plants, it's 60 to 90 days, depending on the species. And you usually don't want to plant them more than half the diameter of the seed itself. So you would collect them now as they ripen and then go ahead, if it says, put them out this year.
You think they need an acid bath?
That's what I would look in that manual for, because if they do, that manual will tell you that, because it talks about nursery treatments, and I can't keep track of some, because there are some plants that we do use, like a sulfuric acid quick treatment to break that seed coat dormancy. But that woody seed manual will give you any of those suggestions based on species.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. Molly is up next in Green. Hi, Molly.
Hi. My question is, I have a 92-year-old white pine that's in the middle of three, and the other night it got struck by lightning. And it's pretty much down almost to the ground.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it goes all the way through the tree. Is there any hope for that?
There's always hope. There's always hope, but time will tell. So there's a couple things I would – the first thing I would be most concerned, depending on the location of this plant, would be concerned about what the structure left is, as far as if it actually goes all the way through, did it cause a big crack? Is that going to damage the integrity of that tree? So I would try to get a certified arborist or arborist to look at the structure. The thing as far as is that tree going to make it is a lot of it just depends on how hot that strike was, because I've seen so many different ones that, you know, you just see a little damage and that tree dies 6 months later. I've seen ones that go really deep, and those trees you say, well, that got hit 10 years ago and it's still alive. So a lot of it depends on how hot that strike was, how much moisture was in the trunk, and how much damage it did. And so a lot of times, especially with a white pine, if someone looks at it and says the structure's okay, you still would be on alert for probably the next year. For at least a year, you're going to watch that tree. And if everything looks okay in the first 6 months, you could still probably have some issues within a year and maybe get some decline. But the first thing I'd look at is have someone look at the structure and the integrity left to see if that tree is safe to even kind of give it a chance to see what happens. But you don't want to try to seal those wounds. The tree's going to try to seal it itself. Don't put any tar, any kind of paint, anything like that. You're going to probably get a lot of sap flow being a pine tree, and that's just the tree trying to respond to that wounding. But I think the key thing is to look at the structure and then go from there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll hope for you. Again, I've seen it go both ways. I mean, a lot of it just depends on how hard and how hot the hit was.
All right. Good luck, Molly. Let's do a few email questions here. This one's from Brenda. My daughter planted roses in a big pot in the spring, and they've grown quite big. I have no idea what they are. Can I replant them in the ground?
You can try. I would try and get them into the ground fairly quickly because I want them to establish a good root system before winter. And I would probably mulch them really heavily over the winter, because if they're a hybrid tea rose, they're marginally cold hardy, so that would help protect them.
But there's really nothing to lose there, because you're going to lose it if you don't plant it, and you might lose it if you plant it.
Exactly. So you waste a little bit of time if you lose it.
And
just
a little
planting
bit of mulch.
And a little bit of mulch, but you might gain a nice rose shrub next week.
Right. All right. Good luck, Brenda. From Laura, from Laura, could you recommend a small to medium native shade tree for a full sun southern exposure in clay to medium soil? I need a tree to provide shade for our patio area.
small to medium native tree.
Yep.
The big problem there is clay. But most of our soils are pretty tough anyway. But I would actually consider a species such as blue beech or ironwood. They're both kind of medium size in that 30 to 35 feet. One has a little better fall color than the other. Blue beech, another name for blue beech is called musselwood. They have a very shiny leaf. Mm-hmm. They both kind of have upright forms, but both of them are pretty tolerable to a lot of different. The problem with clay is we all have clay, so you don't know what. Right. If it's not wet, then I would say either of those species, either looking at ironwood. I would stay away from things like serviceberry because they tend to like a more shaded, especially red bud. So I'd look at one of those too.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is here along with Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Cindy Haynes is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's do a couple more email questions here, then we'll get back to the phones. Marlene asks, do you recommend planting blue spruce in Iowa, and what evergreens would do well in a new development?
Well, my name's not Jeff Files, so I do not recommend blue spruce.
this is a
Iowa.
Controversial
this
question.
This is very
Marlene,
controversial.
Yeah.
We've gone back and forth many, many times in public and private. And I am a little bigger than him, so I can sit on him. So in case he's listening. So Marlene, I have a lot of concerns with Colorado spruce, Colorado blue spruce, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes it's blue, sometimes it's not. But there is a significant needle cast, and the thing we have to remember about Iowa is our summers tend to be kind of hot and humid. It's been a little humid lately, and the other thing is we've had a lot of more continuous, wetter springs. We're getting more moisture in that springtime, and a lot of these fungi that attack these different trees really do well in that weather, and if you continue the humidity through the summer, it kind of keeps things going. And I will give Dr. Isles that you can go out and find individual Colorado spruce that look pretty good. Mm-hmm. But if you look not even close, just look around, there's a lot that don't look good. They lose the lower branches, and usually they start losing them about the time they look good. When they get about 20 feet tall, they're mm-hmm. looking great. You love them. So I would stay away from
break
those.
Your heart.
Yes. So, but the challenge is, and I know Iowa State's been looking closer, there's not a lot of great conifers for Iowa. You have to remember, most of the state, if you look at the literature, was conifers right after the glaciers moved north. They really were. But as things warmed up at 8,000 years ago, we became more of a deciduous forest and prairie state. And so those conifers really aren't that adaptive to the conditions that we have now. So it's really tough for them. So someone mentioned white pine. White pine does fairly well, but you have to protect them from deer early. Once they get established, you're usually okay with deer. Some people like Norway spruce as an alternative to the blue spruce. They have some issues too, but they don't seem to get the needle cast that the blue spruce or Colorado spruce get. I would avoid even white spruce and Black Hills spruce unless I'm getting further out in the western part of the state, but they are also susceptible to some of these needle casts. Some people have been looking at Serbian spruce as a potential alternative, mm-hmm. but we don't know how well it's going to do. If you don't have a lot of deer and you want more of a hedge or just a screen, the arborvitas, northern white cedar, actually do very well. I would stay away from the upright columnar varieties. Those took a big hit in the 2012 drought in those dry mm-hmm. conditions. I've even seen a little bit this summer in places where it's been drier than not. And then I always have to throw out my favorite, Eastern Red Cedar, Juniperus virginiana. Cindy's over here just cringing. But people think it's kind of ugly in the winter.
But it grows anywhere.
But it grows anywhere. Mm-hmm. It is considered native. It's spread by birds. But so our list is pretty short. We are starting to look at another one, especially as you get in the western part of the state. Things are drier. Concolor fir, mm-hmm. white fir is another name.
That's a beautiful one.
I don't see them do as well kind of east of I-35 because of the moisture and stuff like that and potential diseases. But as you go further west, I see quite a few. So it kind of depends on your location. And there's a few others. There's some people are looking at things like cane and fir. We're growing those for Christmas trees. Hmm. So some people are starting to look at those for possible windbreaks and stuff like that. So it's a very limited choice.
All right. And she said do well in a new development. Does she need to look at amending her soil as she plants something in a new development because so often the topsoil has been taken?
You would like to do that, but the problem with amending soil, you would have to amend everything. And you'd have to amend it down to probably 3 feet. And we're just not going to do that. So one thing an old tree person from Extension used to say, Paul Ray, is on these new landscapes, let it freeze and thaw for a couple years before you get your trees. Get your grass established mm-hmm. and some of your other perennials maybe. But then for trees, maybe even consider waiting a couple years, getting that freeze and thaw. And the other thing is just try to find species that are going to be adaptive. But it's really hard, and we really don't recommend amending the whole because mm-hmm. you're basically putting a tree then in a big bathtub,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to get that good drainage. So letting it go through some freezing and thaw situations might help a little bit before right. you start.
That's hard. The first thing everybody wants to do is plant a tree.
All right, let's
get to the phone. Sue is on the line in Pleasanton. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. The first is I had construction done, and I lost an entire sunbed. But up through that 25-ton of soil that was dumped, I have volunteer sweet autumns that have come up and a couple of false indigos.
Oh.
Can I successfully, they're kind of resilient.
Yeah, those are a couple of good plants to have, too.
Yeah, and I have plenty of hostas and clematis are kind of a favorite. Mm-hmm. So, but especially with the false indigo, I lost one which was just huge. Can mm-hmm. I move this out of my yard and move it to where it needs to be?
You can. False indigo does have a fairly deep root system, and you're going to need to dig as much of that soil as you can to move it and transplant it successfully.
Okay. All right.
So that's something to think about. They don't always transplant as well as other perennials, but now's a good time to try it. It probably won't bloom as well next year, but give it, next year to recover, and it'll probably be fine. And then that sweet autumn clematis, I would wait until spring to move if you want to move it, because it's probably trying to do its thing right now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And the false indigo, it just grew up in the middle of the yard. It's another. My original was bird planted 30 years ago. So this one has been or squinty planted as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. My other question is, I have a friend that has a picu garden over in eastern Iowa, and she's working on a stumpery. Can you tell me, I just think this would be the most interesting thing to do.
You're talking about taking a stump, hollowing it out, and planting in the stump, using that as a planter? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, or I think what I've seen is that it was a tree that fell over,
okay.
So the roots and everything are exposed, and it's a nice, craggy old tree. And it appears that they just plant the plants directly into the cracks and crags of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make perfect sense, or is it just something I'd have to, one more thing I'd have to really tend to?
Well, you might have to do some tending. This is like a nurse log kind of situation out in maybe the Pacific Northwest, where they have other things that kind of grow on those trees that kind of fall over.
It's kind of like a natural pot, though. My neighbor actually did it.
Yeah.
They actually planted a small dogwood in it, and it's actually done very well.
Yeah, I think it depends on, when we had this really dry summer, you might have had to go out and water because then it's a little bit exposed.
Right.
You want to make sure you have something that's kind of hardy because it might be a little bit higher. But yeah, this is, I mean, this
depends
is,
on the material that you fill it with and stuff as far as drainage and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's always, I think it's a possibility.
And it's just constantly feeding or some sort of organic matter for the plant that you planted. So this could be kind of cool. And
but
I like,
you may
I like
have
the
to,
name
the one thing I do see is you may have to do some adjustments because I see as that root starts to decay, you may get some sinking and stuff.
Sure.
So you may have to adjust that over time depending on how things, and I've noticed our neighbors.
I would think it would change every year.
The trunk is starting to fall apart from the sides. So they're starting to lose, but it still has character. It's got that color of kind of decay and stuff. And when you have decaying wood, you're also going to get fungi. So you may get some mushrooms popping up and some things, which are fine. You can just pull them out and stuff, but just things to adapt to.
Yeah. So keep
it's
an
nature.
Eye on. Yeah, it's nature. So it may require some care, but it sounds like a fun project.
Yes.
All right, Sue, thanks for your call. Blair's up next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Blair.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about prairie grasses.
Okay.
What I did is my backyard, it's in the backyard, it's full sun. The yard itself is suburban, or just, you know, Cedar Falls is not huge. It's 120 feet long by 50 feet deep, and it's an incline. It drops about 3 feet on one end and four on the other.
Okay.
So I terraced it. And the I used, you know, towards Omaha where they have the erosion berms?
Mm-hmm.
And up in Sioux City, they have them in Dubuque, I mean, in around Ames also.
Mm-hmm.
You know those berms? Well, I used that for water retention as a wall. And I planted Big Blue, Little Blue, Side Oats Grandma.
Nice.
Canada Wild Rye, Switchgrass, Prairie Drop Seed, Yellow Coneflower, and Bergamot.
Nice.
And it's doing... It's doing okay, but my question is to deal with invasive grasses, like the broadleaf ones. It's new, it's fresh, and I'm growing it. I've been growing it for years, but this is a fresh planting. I can deal with the broadleaf weeds, but quackgrass. I'm really crabgrass I can handle, but quack is a problem, I think. So my question is how do I deal with non indigenous grasses.
Right.
Tall grass.
Right. And so herbicides might not be the answer here because a lot of the herbicides target grasses or they target broadleaves. So, and you want to keep those grasses, which means then you're out there pulling or hoeing or tilling or burning some of those things to kind of try and manage the natives that might be able to tolerate certain things and selectively remove what you don't want.
Yeah. Have you done that in your yard, Mark? How did you control that?
Mostly by hand,
yeah.
But I don't have that big of an area either. The other thing, you may want to talk to your local soil and water conservation district because, and I don't know this to be able to answer it, but I know if you're doing any... You can burn at certain times too, to promote the natives over the over the cool season to get some of the cool season. Your timing of the burns can actually set back some of the cool season grasses. So that may be a way to do that too. But if burning's not an option, then burning's not an option. But the timing of burning can sometimes alter that too.
Right. Cutting it back probably isn't going to control the quackgrass. So you're, like I said, you're going to have to be a little more selective and really think this out. I like the burning option if you can burn, but yeah.
Well, you have a wonderful resource in Cedar Falls with the Tallgrass Prairie Center in
that's
Cedar
where
Falls.
I would go.
So go and ask and
good luck.
There are a lot of people that know a lot of things. Let's go next to Karen near Kellogg, who also has a prairie question. Hi, Karen.
Hi, shout out first of all to Professor Haynes because I got my master's under Dr. Stevens in horticulture 30 years ago.
Nice!
And shout out to, of course, Charity, who interviewed my Latin duo, Cayasur, not so long ago.
Great.
Question. I'm helping restore an area that used to be brown grass to prairie, and we've been at it for maybe 10 years, planted a bunch of forbs, do occasional burning, and then depending on the time of year, mowing. And I've noticed that, yes, we're getting rid of the brown grass, and yes, forbs are coming forth, but also this nasty, aggressive, invasive wild grape, which I have tried to control stems and kind of brushing brush killer on it, but it seems to be so good at sending underground roots that mm-hmm. the stuff just pops up everywhere. Any suggestions?
Well, with this one, it may require, like I said, this one might be a little bit more targeted to some sort of herbicide. You can, you know, apply it to the leaves. You might even try if it cut it and apply it to the cut surface. That might be more effective at, you know, take it to the roots and killing that particular plant. It does have this ability to kind of root at nodes as it's growing as well. So removing what you can may help prevent as well.
I always go back to this. The other thing is I believe it could obviously be a wild grape, but in case it's something else, I would try to get it identified. Get this plant positively identified to see what it is, to see if there's any other ways to manage it mm-hmm. and control it. Because there's a lot of weird stuff starting to show up out there, Karen. I mean, just new plants, some invasive, some not. Some are more aggressive than others. So I would get it identified to make sure that it is a wild grape.
Right.
And then
We want to make sure it's not kudzu or something
else. Well, or something else. Mm-hmm. But there's because I even think of Oriental bittersweet. It's a mm-hmm. very, very aggressive. The leaf doesn't look like a wild grape, but it's a very viney plant
that it's receding too,
and it can reseed. Mm-hmm. But if you know what bittersweet is, you would probably know based on seeds. But I would try to get it identified and then go from there.
All right, Karen, thanks for your call and good luck with that. Here's an email from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. I have a large mature lilac that is hanging over my fence into the neighbor's yard. The offending limb is probably about 10 feet long, but is leaning outward and is only about 6 feet off the ground. It's about 3 inches in diameter at the base. I'd like to just lop the whole thing off down to the ground and be done with it, but I don't want to traumatize the rest of the plant, which is equally large but not encroaching anywhere problematic. I have no gardening skill, but I'd like to keep the plant as happy as I can while not bothering the neighbors. What do you think?
I would either lop it or use the 1/3, maybe just to kind of help the plant adjust sure. to the removal. Cut it back 1/3 so it helps the neighbor so they're not unhappy, and then just keep over right. a 3-year period, get it down to the ground.
Yeah, I think I would just take it out, you know, in that dormant period. Maybe take the whole thing out and help rejuvenate the plant, because this sounds pretty big.
Yeah. All right. So, mm-hmm. And our final question of the day from Dorothy in Ames. I have an extensive ring of wildflower garden circling my 2-acre lot. Goldenrod has progressively taken over and even invading my other garden areas. I've tried to diversify the wildflower areas, but without success. Are there any plants that will compete with goldenrod? Is there any way to get rid of it in some areas of the wildflower garden? Help with a lot of exclamation points.
Right. Hand removal of some of those might be important, because that one's not so easy to identify until it starts to flower. And then some other things that might compete a little bit are at the same time that Ratibita, which is an Indian coneflower, a gray coneflower, that kind of fills in certain areas as well. But remove some of them, hand removal half of them, and she'll be fine.
All right. And remove them before they go to seed, right?
Absolutely. Soon.
All right. Cindy Haynes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. We are taking a break from Horticulture Day next Friday because next week is Iowa Week. We're exploring the question of, is this home? Then we'll be back with Hort Day again weekly. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.